This podcast is brought to you by Crokesbury Books online store. Are you a dying mainline church in need of transformation without your members having to sacrifice anything or change anything about the way they've done church for the last 75 years? Then Crokesbury Books is the online bookstore for you. This February is our warehouse clearance sale month. Take advantage of our leftover Christmas items at an incredible price. You can have them now and save them for next year. With any luck, next Christmas season, you'll forget where you put this stuff and that it even exists, and you'll buy more stuff from us next year. The birth of Jesus is something we use to make money. Don't hate us. Everybody does it. You'll find great sale prices on our nativity sets. It seems many of our customers were uncomfortable with the nativity sets that had a black wise man. They let us know that given their fear of Black Lives Matter protesters rioting in their neighborhoods and churches, that looking at a black man so close to their white baby Jesus was upsetting. So we have a lot of these left over at great prices. Likewise, we have some nativity sets made by artisans in third world countries that are sold to us at what is called a fair trade price, where more proceeds are supposed to go back to the artistic collectives in those countries that actually produce the art rather than exploitative middlemen. Well, customers have offered some online reviews. They say that the nativity sets, which have Latino-looking Marys and Josephs and baby Jesus, are just a way for the libtard snowflakes to pass an immigration agenda that lets illegals skip to the front of the line with their anchor babies. Likewise, the nativity sets with slanty-eyed Asian-looking Marys, Josephs, and Jesus were also upsetting because clearly these so-called fair trade artisan collectives were Chinese communist ploys to overturn our Christ-centered free market economy. So we have a lot of these left over too. Finally, we have Advent calendars that contain the verse from Isaiah 9, which includes the words, quote, "And his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." Well, some loyal customers let us know that the inclusion of the words Prince of Peace amounted to a globalist conspiracy intended to make it so Americans would not support our troops. So we have a bunch of these Advent calendars to offload at low, low prices. Order these books now at crokesbury.edu via our online Bible College bookstore website. Please know, our Bible College is not accredited at this time. We are glad to send you ebooks because the United States Postal Service is a socialist plot that should be privatized, and their so-called Postmaster General is clearly just another term for the Antichrist, who wants to impose a one-world government upon us via his uniformed troops, which know our home addresses and peer into our windows, seeing us in our most private moments. And by ebooks, we mean books that have been photographed and their images were downloaded onto Laserdiscs. Please note, customers will have to have a 1981 Sony Laserdisc player around to access your ebook. Preferably, your 1981 Sony Laserdisc player should be hooked up to a 1972 Magnavox console TV. For best results, make sure it's a Magnavox console TV with a remote control the size of a cinder block, which only has channel and volume buttons on it. For best results, the remote control should be the kind that makes a satisfying clunk sound every time you change the channel, as if the little men living inside said console TV just lifted up and dropped a steel plate inside of it, big enough to be used by a steroid-infused Bulgarian freeweight lifter in some kind of commie-run Olympic event. Try Croaksbury Books today. Happy 2021, Save Me Podcast listeners. I hope you are living in a more hopeful space without a narcissistic would-be dictator tweeting crazy stuff and dominating the media every day. And with vaccines beginning to get out there, albeit with some problems. I am breathing easier, although I'm hearing from a lot of folks that they remain in the grind of just trying to make it to the end of this pandemic with all of its troubles. Wherever you are on that spectrum of hope to despair, take a breath. Remember, you are alive. Just count up five things real quick you have to be thankful for. Go find something funny to laugh about. Do all the stuff that helps your brain start firing the happy chemicals. If you have hung with me along my journey over the last year, thank you. On the day I'm recording this, it is the day after the one-year anniversary of walking into a meeting and discovering I was being fired / forced out of the church I'd been serving for 7.5 years. It's been a year, and I still can't find the correct words to describe what happened. When you are forced to resign in order to get severance, to keep supporting your family, did you resign or did you really get fired? What do you call that? I had wanted to do a podcast for years, but never did much about it. And in the weeks after I was canned, before I found new employment, I figured, what the hell? I'm just going to vent my experience on a podcast. As time went on, I found work as an interim minister. I felt the pain become more manageable. And the strange thing was, I felt like I had to censor myself when it came to this podcast. I knew some folks at the new church I was serving had begun listening, and I didn't really want to be that transparent anymore. Can you really feel good about your minister when he seems to be in despair about the purpose of church and his place in it? I've put out episodes and some interviews I feel good about, but I've never been able to keep it going as often as I had hoped. This is harder than it looks, and as I've said from the beginning, I don't know what I'm doing with this thing. I've had plenty of days over the past year when depression has kept me from wanting to be creative, and I have given in to the voice in my head, that voice that always says, you aren't creative, and you don't really have anything original to offer, and there's no point in doing a stupid podcast. On top of that, I screwed up this fall. I recorded an interview with a great couple, Jason and Dina Hobbs. I've known Jason since seminary days. He's now a licensed clinical social worker who is a counselor, and Dina is a minister. And they authored a great book called When Anxiety Strikes, Help and Hope for Managing Your Storm. I thought in the middle of the pandemic, what an appropriate title. It would be helpful to people, and these two folks have a great journey to share. Well, it took me too long to get around to editing the interview. I didn't realize that the free software I was using for the call and to record it erased the audio after a certain amount of time, and I felt very stupid, and the shame voice took over, and I felt like I'd let them down, I'd let myself down, and I guess it was a nice place to park my shame and my anxiety and my insecurity. So it took me a long time to come back to this podcasting habit of mine. As an aside, if anxiety is a thing for you or people you know, I really do recommend Jason and Dina's book. It's an easy read, and each brief chapter has exercises to help you learn steps to deal with anxiety. And it comes from real people, and Dina is especially vulnerable in a good way about her experiences with anxiety. It doesn't come from an expert talking down to you, but from people who have lived it and work hard to help others. When Anxiety Strikes, How to Manage Your Storm by Jason and Dina Hobbs. I can't offer you the great interview with them, but I can at least plug the book to you, and if you need it, I hope you get it. I did put together a little episode after Christmas, around New Year's. If you missed it, take a listen. Some people who did liked it. That episode, as well as this one and the next few, are mainly going to be stuff I have written myself to share at the church I'm serving. These are particular stuff that I think are not specific to that church, but a more general audience. I know that we are a month out from the riot / insurrection at the Capitol building on January 6th, no less than the day of Epiphany for you church nerds out there. But if you're like me, you're still freaked out by both the events of that day and the continual pressure to just shrug and move past it, as if it was somehow okay or normal that a bunch of people waving Confederate flags, wearing Camp Auschwitz t-shirts, killed a cop and broke into Congress in a stupid attempt to overturn an election. About a week afterward, after days of reading about QAnon conspiracies to try to figure out what is it with this stuff and their hold on people, I wrote about how all the QAnon conspiracy theories in so many ways line up with the apocalyptic conspiracy theories I heard growing up in evangelical churches. Apparently, I'm not alone because I've seen a couple of published pieces pointing out the similarities, but I still haven't seen anything that points out all the connections I feel exist. So that's what's coming on later in this episode. I still want to do this podcast thing. I'm going to keep trying to put out episodes. I'm really grateful for friends who have listened and even strangers who have been supportive. I want to send a special shout out to Jimmy Haas. Jimmy is a guy I originally knew when he was a high schooler at a church I served in New York. He not only has given me the mic I'm speaking in, but has taken over the audio editing so I can put this podcast out faster. I don't really feel like I deserve his help, but I am taking it, so thank you, Jimmy. I made it through a year after one of the worst things that has happened to me in life. I still feel vocationally lost. At the church where I am interim, numerous folks have asked me if I would consider staying as their pastor. I've had to say no. Not because of any fault with that church. In so many ways, I have to say being with them has been healing for me because it's a healthier church system than the one I was in. And seeing that has been good for me. But I'm saying no because they deserve a pastor who is excited to be there, who has energy to take on something new and isn't in the space I am in. Namely, that I don't know if I was called to be a minister. Was I ever called? If so, am I still called? I'm not even sure what I believe the church or a church is supposed to be anymore. In so many ways, I love and I remain passionately interested in all things church and whatever that means. I can't imagine doing a job that isn't related to church somehow, but I have no idea what that means or how one makes a living, especially when you're confused as I am about the church and what it is and what in the world my place is in it. If you're still listening, thank you. I feel like this continued attempt to put out a podcast is my cry out into the void. Does anything I'm saying make sense? Does it resound with anyone else? Am I alone in what I feel? I'm throwing this out there maybe just to make myself feel important or that I'm doing something that matters, even though I have real doubts whether it does. Depression has been my unwelcome fellow traveler on my journey probably all of my life. Currently, my therapist has given me homework to speak to my depression as if it were an animated being and tell it, thank you for trying to protect me, but you, in fact, aren't helping me. You're making things worse. And that seems whack to me, but since depression is an active voice in my head, I guess it's only moderately crazy to speak back to it. When I do, I feel a bit better, and I feel sort of like, fuck it, I'm going to put out this podcast because I want to. Whether anybody listens to it or not, I'm going to keep making snarky fake sponsorships because they make me laugh, and God knows I could use more laughter in my life. So, look, there's going to be more of this stuff, I hope. The podcast is on Twitter and the Facebook and iTunes and a bunch of other podcast platforms, so follow, like, don't like, review or whatever, or don't. Thank you for being a part of my journey over the last year. I'm still going. Since then, I'm still confused. I'm anxious. I got the whole depression thing that's always with me. But along the way, I've had moments of joy, and I've had moments of grace, too. So when I bother to stop and reflect on it, I can see little sparkly moments in the darkness. So just a reminder that if you've stumbled on this podcast because you need somebody to save you, do not look at me. I'm looking for somebody, something to save me too. If you've got a handle on a salvation, preferably in a pill form I could take and it would be really fast, or maybe in the form of a craft beer, not an IPA because they're too hoppy for me, but that would be smooth drinking. Whatever salvation you got to offer, I am taking it because I'm looking for somebody to save me too. This podcast is sponsored by Mountain Song Church for celebrities and people who worship them. Recently, you may have seen in the news that Mountain Song Church for celebrities and people who worship them had to let go of one of its ministers for sexual behavior that was against our church's moral code. We continue to offer counseling and support to this pastor and his wife, but we feel that he failed to live up to the discretion we expect of our ministers, who should know better than to cheat on their wives with women who have not signed non-disclosure agreements beforehand. We want to assure you and our international community of congregations around the globe that we continue to offer our ministry to celebrities and to the people who worship celebrities unabated, in spite of the moral failings of one of our ministers, who was too dumb to know that his affair would get out into the tabloids. We continue to call as a part of our church pop stars like Justin Bieber, except not really Justin Bieber anymore since he is now going to another celebrity megachurch, but other pop stars just as good as Justin Bieber. Our Korean congregation also has K-pop groups that you haven't heard of yet, but will any moment become the latest sensation on TikTok. Go ask your kids about them. And we also minister to young, sexy movie stars whom we intercepted on their way into Scientology buildings. Thankfully, they became a part of our celebrity exploiting congregation and not the celebrity exploiting false religion cult of Scientology. We want you to know that the recent scandal of one of our ministers being an ignorant jackass, too arrogant to believe his wife wouldn't find out about his affair, and in a spite-filled Jezebel-like act would spill the beans to internet gossip purveyors instead of just being a submissive wife who enjoys the benefits of having lots of money and hobnobbing with celebrities. None of that will stop Mountain Song Church from carrying out its ministries and having incredible concert-level worship services, hip pastors dressed in the latest fashions, and lots of celebrities who make you feel special because you are a part of the same church as they are. Although your particular part of the Mountain Song community means watching our services online in a strip mall in Oklahoma in what used to be a circuit city, and not at all like our celebrity-packed Hollywood location where everything is live, wonderful, and glamorous, far too glamorous for ordinary people from places like Oklahoma to ever be a part of. Just ignore this little bit of bad news about Mountain Song. After all, we all have fallen short of the glory of God. And if that means all of our clergy and all of our locations around the world are sex-addicted orgy-goers, well then, thank God that God is so gracious and forgiving. Come be a part of Mountain Song, where you can be part of the same church as Justin Bieber, or a celebrity just as special as Justin Bieber, since he no longer goes here anymore. I've been thinking a lot lately about the QAnon conspiracies that apparently motivated many of the rioters who attacked the Capitol building on January 6th. These conspiracy theories include ideas like the Democrats are running a pedophile ring and imprisoning children out of a local pizza restaurant in Washington, D.C. The COVID-19 vaccine is a way for the government, or maybe Bill Gates, to implant tracking microchips into the American population, and other outlandish ideas, running the gambit from JFK still being alive to 5G cell phone service being used for mind control. The rioters included many who identify as evangelical Christians, and reporters quoted many who believe Donald Trump was predicted in the Bible. I'd encourage you to read an article called, I think, Among the Insurrectionists, that a reporter for The Atlantic wrote. He was at the rally and interviewed people as they marched on the Capitol. And they pretty much were equating loving and trusting God with loving and trusting Trump. Praise God, praise Trump, talk like that. The talk of spiritual warfare included ideas of fighting against a secret cabal of Satanists. All that brings back a lot of memories for me. I grew up hearing similar kinds of conspiracy theories long before QAnon showed up. I heard them all the time in Bible studies about the apocalyptic writings in the Bible, writings like the Book of Revelation, Daniel, and other passages. My Southern Baptist minister father and my preacher's wife mother didn't believe in stuff like the rapture, the Antichrist, and the mark of the beast, and so on. But my father served in churches full of people who did. Whether it was at youth camp, revival services, or Bible studies, I heard a steady stream of conspiracies about the government, communists, the United Nations, barcodes on groceries, and more. The Antichrist could be anyone from the latest Soviet leader to Ronald Reagan. Here's a hint. Take Ronald Reagan's full name, Ronald Wilson Reagan. Each of his names has six letters, which equals 666. George Bush Sr.'s statement about a new world order after the fall of the Berlin Wall inspired countless books about the United Nations imposing a one-world government, like the Babylon mentioned in Revelation. I remember when ATM machines first became popular, hearing people seriously ask if their PIN numbers were the mark of the beast. By the 1980s, the so-called Satanic Panic occurred, when all across the nation, people who saw Christian counselors, quote, recovered, unquote, what they thought were repressed memories of being sexually abused by rings of Satanists. In Christian bookstores and on TV shows like Pat Robertson's The 700 Club, people spoke of recovered memories that included rings of Satanists sacrificing babies. I recall reading a book called Satan's Underground, written by a woman who claimed to have been a victim of what became known as satanic ritual abuse. I can also remember reading a book called The Satan Cellar by a leading Christian speaker named Mike Warnke, who claimed to be a reformed Satanist. The authors of both books were exposed as frauds in the early 1990s. An immensely popular fiction book in evangelical circles was called This Present Darkness. It told the tale of a literal battle between angels and demons in a small town where ordinary Christians were the means that God's forces defeated their fellow townspeople who were possessed by evil spirits. I can recall specifically that the university in the town was the hotbed of where the demons lived. You gotta fear higher education. I recall feeling like demons were behind every bush after reading it. Once the satanic panic was proved to be untrue after a literal nationwide FBI investigation, and numbers of people were jailed after this panic occurred, who happened to be innocent, experts labeled it as an event of mass hysteria or moral panic. By the time I went to a Baptist college where most of the student body believed similar stuff like this, I began to see that my parents' cautions about buying into such beliefs were indeed valid. Through more grounded Christian mentors and caring religion professors, I let go of all such preoccupations with Christian apocalyptic conspiracy theories. So I missed the whole new round of apocalyptic fads, which reached mainstream popularity in the 90s. In the 1990s, the first Gulf War prompted a new round of speculation. Best-selling books and videos claimed Saddam Hussein was the Antichrist. They looked an awful lot like claims about the Ayatollah Khomeini a decade earlier. Later on, the same claims would be made about Osama bin Laden. Sexual Puritan turned apocalyptic expert Tim LaHaye, along with the fiction writer Jerry Jenkins, published the Left Behind series of New York Times best-selling books, which recycled the same conspiracies about a one-world government, an antichrist who made use of the United Nations, the rapture, which meant that literally God took Christian airline pilots up to heaven and let airliners full of non-Christians crash to the earth. And even though these ideas were recycled, they capitalized on anxieties regarding the year 2000. You can still find on your favorite streaming service Kirk Cameron's movie version of the Left Behind movies. Ah, Kirk. What happened to that young man we all met on Growing Pains? Where did you go? Speaking of the year 2000, fears about the so-called millennium bug folded neatly into evangelical fears about societal collapse, and what now are called preppers held trade shows full of survival goods at evangelical churches as the 20th century counted down to zero. 9/11 and the events afterward led to yet another round of the same evangelical conspiracy theories. I have friends who bought gold to prepare for the coming economic collapse and end times. For all I know, they made out quite well, given the 2008 financial crisis. The rise of the internet and social media just seems to have kicked these evangelical apocalyptic conspiracies into overdrive. Sociologists are calling QAnon a digital cult because of its hold on people. Yet much of the language used, spiritual warfare, combating rings of Satanists who abduct and sexually assault children, fighting against globalists, all sounds familiar to me. The roots of this stuff, of course, go back deep in American history, back through McCarthyism, back through Henry Ford spreading the fraudulent The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, and the apocalyptic imagery used by the Ku Klux Klan and more. There is a deep fascination within white Protestant American Christianity for violent, apocalyptic conspiracies. Psychiatrists and sociologists point out motives for believing in conspiracy theories. Motives for getting involved in this stuff include everything from dissociative identity disorder, cultural anxiety, and simple low self-esteem. Experts note that conspiracy theories are prevalent on the fringes of both the political left and the political right. But in my opinion, the political right seems to be enjoying a flurry of such thinking in recent years. To me, it seems the seeds planted by the religious right in the late 1970s have finally sprouted in violent form. The toxic mix of evangelical Christianity and conservative politics that has been a part of political life since then has always included a steady stream of apocalyptic beliefs, which reduce the complexities of the modern world to dualistic good and evil. The problem with this thinking, of course, is that when your political adversary becomes an agent of Satan, there is no room for compromise. The basic humanity of someone is lost if they are in league with the embodiment of evil, with a capital E. One cannot do anything other than destroy someone who seeks to destroy the world as you know it. Compromise is the equivalent of giving in to sinful evil. We saw some of the inevitable consequences of such thinking a few weeks back at the Capitol building. Even a willing purveyor of such apocalyptic evangelical Christianity like Mike Pence can find himself instantly put on the list of satanic enemies to be destroyed. And before you feel too sorry for Mike Pence, I would recommend to you the writings of the journalist Jeff Shartlett, probably the best journalist on religion and politics writing today. He did a whole book on C Street and another book called The Family about this right-wing apocalyptic Christianity infecting the highest levels of the Republican Party, and one of his main characters was Mike Pence. But you know, when one plays with the fire of this kind of religious fervor, you will inevitably get burned, as Pence, I hope, has learned. When you dance with the devil, he steps on your feet, if not every other part of you. What I came to see on my own religious journey is that if one holds to a belief system that includes evangelical apocalyptic conspiracies, it becomes difficult to do much of anything Jesus actually taught. One cannot pray for and love one's enemies if one is fighting a spiritual war to destroy the enemies of God. One cannot turn the other cheek or walk the extra mile when the Antichrist is the one hitting you or asking you to carry their rucksack. One cannot forgive someone if they are a part of Satan's army. This is why conspiracy theories wrapped in the mantle of Christianity, whether it's anti-communism or it's QAnon, always end up being something antithetical to Christianity. A belief system so devoid of love can never be called Christian. Grace and peace to you, dear listener.